This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Adam Hochberg in today for Frank Stacio. President Trump unveiled his budget proposal this week. The plan includes increased spending for the military, for homeland security, and veterans programs. It cuts spending for just about everything else, with some of the deepest cuts in the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Agriculture, social service programs, the State Department, and the arts. Democrats savage the plan. Even many Republicans are critical of the cuts in foreign aid and the State Department. They're also discouraged that the Trump budget doesn't reduce overall government spending. Joining us to talk about President Trump's budget and much more in Washington is political junkie Ken Rudin. Welcome back to the program, Ken.
Good to talk to you, Adam.
Always a pleasure. Ken, I think for context, we should first ask, what's the chance that this budget in its current form will pass Congress?
Well, I think between none and none.
Between none and none.
The point is, this is a blueprint. This is all, whenever a president submits a budget to Congress, you know that, I mean, most times you always hear the word dead on arrival, no matter who, whether it's Obama, whether it's Bill Clinton, whether it's Reagan, anybody. What's interesting is that this is a Republican president and the Republican Congress. But as you pointed out in the intro, not only do Democrats object strenuously to so many of the cuts, but Republicans do as well.
Still, this does tell us something about the priorities of the Trump administration, right?
It does. So first of all, two things that Donald Trump promised that he's delivering on. One, he promised to build up the military, as well as increased support for veterans, and he's done that. And he's also talked about, you know, getting rid of those so-called wasteful government programs, such as the EPA. We know how he feels about climate change and how he feels about foreign aid and how he feels about aid to the poor, but he also talked about balancing the budget, and of course this doesn't even come close to balancing the budget. If anything, it's a status quo when it comes to that.
So how do you go about trying to sell this politically? I mean, you're looking at some of the cuts in here. Hal Rogers, he's a congressman from Kentucky, he called the budget cuts draconian, careless, and counterproductive, and he's a Republican. Some of these cuts...
Not only is he Republican, he's a former chairman of the Appropriations Committee. He knows budgets. He's a conservative. And yet he knows that so many of the members, Republican members, have been reelected on promises that they would keep to their constituency. And when that gets wiped out, but it's interesting, how do you sell this? Donald Trump really doesn't seem to care so much about trying to sell it or the political realities to it. He's going to obviously leave that to the appropriators in both the House and the Senate. And as we said earlier, this is really a blueprint. It's not going to look anything like the final product, but it is one a sop to his base, the president's base. He really, I mean, if you listen to Mick Mulvaney, the budget director yesterday, he basically said, well, what do you expect? This is exactly what Donald Trump campaigned on. But selling it to constituencies, especially Republicans who have to get reelected in 2018, is another thing entirely.
Don't you have to make a transition, though, from campaign mode where you can propose all these pie-in-the-sky ideas and hit all the applause lines to energize your base and actually governing, which involves some compromise, some moderation, and putting something out that could actually pass?
You've described every president in history except for Donald Trump. If you notice that since his election, since his inauguration, he's given campaign-like speeches as if he's still campaigning against Obama and Hillary and all those evil Democrats in Washington. He's still in campaign mode, and I suspect that he's the kind of guy, Donald Trump, the president, is the kind of guy who would rather campaign rather than govern. A budget like this, when it comes to realities and making choices, I think that's where governing is going to have to take full attention.
Let's talk about another thing that President Trump talked about a lot on the campaign trail but is having trouble putting into place as president, and that's his ban on immigrants and refugees, his travel ban. Once again, this week, a judge slapped down the ban. What message does that send to the Trump administration?
Well, this was fascinating because it's one thing to say when the first executive order was struck down, the judges said, well, you know, it's discriminatory, it will not pass constitutional muster. This one used Donald Trump's words as a candidate to run against him. He said, look, you know, on the face of it, it may pass constitutional muster, but we can't ignore the things that Donald Trump promised when he was a candidate, saying, well, there will be a ban on Muslims entering the country. So it's very rare to see any kind of a judicial body using campaign words from a candidate to rule against the president once he's in office. But I guess when it comes to religious discrimination, which is what the basis of the rejection is, you can't rule out those earlier words. But I thought that was the most fascinating of all of it.
So here's President Trump responding to the ruling at a rally in Nashville earlier this week.
This is a watered-down version. And let me tell you something. I think we ought to go back to the first one and go all the way, which is what I wanted to do in the first place.
President Trump defiantly responding to the judge's ruling at a rally in Nashville this week. Ken Rudin, where do you see this going from here? Are they going to try again?
I think they do, and ultimately I suspect it goes to the Supreme Court. Now, does it go to the Supreme Court with a 4-4 Supreme Court? Does it go to the Supreme Court with Neil Gorsuch already confirmed? And that seems to be likely. I think it does go to the higher court, but I'm not convinced that, you know, they may do any better at the Supreme Court than they are doing with these courts around the country. These are questionable things about discrimination, about religion, about a certain people coming into this country. And I don't know, I can't speak for the Supreme Court, but I suspect that it could be just as difficult passing the Supreme Court, getting a Supreme Court approval, as it has been with the lower courts.
Now, while all this has been going on, President Trump has continued to push these claims that the Obama administration wiretapped Trump Tower during the campaign this week. All of the leaders of the Congressional Intelligence Committees now have discounted that claim, including North Carolina Senator Richard Burr, who put out a statement this week saying he sees no indications that Trump Tower was the subject of surveillance. And here is House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes on Wednesday talking about Trump's claim.
I think a lot of the things that he says, you guys sometimes take literally. Sometimes he doesn't have 27 lawyers and staff looking at what he does, which is, I think, at times refreshing, and at times can also lead us to have to be sitting at a press conference like this answering questions that you guys are asking.
House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes. Ken Rudin, what on earth is he saying there?
Could you imagine intelligence in the same sentence as that statement? I mean, what's remarkable, of course, Nunes did say more recently that he, again, like Richard Burr, he saw no evidence that there was any kind of wiretapping or anything by President Obama regarding the Trump and Trump Tower. But to say things like that, to say that, what's wrong with you? You took the president literally? I mean, this is what we do. He's basically, I mean, this, you know, you can make a case of Roosevelt and the fireside chats and things like that. But to see a president basically making policy by tweets and then everybody jumping to decide whether he was serious or not, whether this is policy or not. I mean, I've seen reports that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, is reacting like he doesn't even know how to react when the president makes a tweet that involves foreign policy and it's not been vetted with the cabinet at all. It's just Donald Trump at 5:30 in the morning. So, but I mean, but as you point out, it not only is Richard Burr and Devin Nunes, but Obama, James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, the FBI director, apparently, the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, yesterday, everybody said, look, there's absolutely no evidence of this. But this is vintage Donald Trump. He'll make a claim like, I mean, how many years did he continue that charade that Barack Obama was not born in this country? And he wouldn't back down until years later. He said, OK, it's probably not true. Or the claim that 3 to 5 million people voted illegally, a claim that was made with no proof. This is vintage Donald Trump. He'll make the claim, and then everybody says, and then he'll say, okay, Congress, investigate it.
I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, today on the state of things. Ken, sorry to cut you off, but I want to move on to one last subject.
I'm very excited about this.
I understand. Yeah. You mentioned Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and he's in South Korea on a more serious thing. He's responding to what could be the first international crisis of the new administration. North Korea continues to ratchet up its nuclear program. Tillerson is now saying the time for negotiations with North Korea is over. He's suggesting U.S. military action. What does this show us about the State Department's tone now dealing with this international situation?
Well, you know, Donald Trump, one of the things he made, the case he made during the campaign, and it was a legitimate case in many ways, is that it was almost like a toothless foreign policy, President Obama, toothless foreign policy. But the fact is, for 20 years, Democrats and Republican presidents have tried to appease Korea billions of dollars in aid, trying to get them away, move away from their nuclear program. It's always failed. And now Tillerson and the administration are saying, okay, you know, nothing has worked so far. Maybe it's time for something new. And that could mean responding militarily if North Korea goes ahead with further tests.
I guess there's a question, and I imagine most of the people in the world community are asking this too. How equipped is President Trump to deal with this kind of high-stakes, possibly nuclear confrontation?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a great question that's not answered yet. Obviously, I don't suspect that Donald Trump has the information and the intelligence. I don't mean personal intelligence. I mean intelligence from the intelligence agencies of what to do, because I think presidents, you know, as I say, going back 20 years, have not known how to respond. There's a carrot and stick response with everything that the Kim family have done in North Korea, and I suspect that this administration will be equally flummoxed. But the fact that Tillerson and the administration is indicating that we need a different approach, that nothing is off the table, It's scary. Certainly, it's scary. It's scary what North Korea is doing, and it's scary if we're talking about nuclear response. But we're living in scary times. I mean, that's the only way I know how to put it.
Political junkie Ken Rudin, thanks for being on the program, Ken.
Adam, you get me so riled up, I can't help it.
Well, try to calm down a little bit.
Thanks. I will.
This is The State of Things. Just ahead, a conversation about music and politics along the Nile River. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.